Chronicles now transmitting.
Welcome to the Tate Chronicles on Healthcare Now Radio. And now, here's your host, Jim Tate.
Good day, citizens of the free world, from border to border, coast to coast, and to all the ships at sea. I bring you a warm welcome. This is your correspondent, Jim Tate, and thank you for tuning into the Tate Chronicles. Join me as we cut through the fog that exists at the leading edge of healthcare technology. Today's episode is sponsored by Hewlett-Packard, the leader in the world's most secure and manageable PCs. You can learn more about HP's Healthcare Edition products at hp.com/go/healthcare/US. I'm very pleased today. My guest is Ann Snowden, who is the Director of Clinical Research at HIMSS. Ann has an extremely deep and varied background in global health issues that encompass such things as supply chain, sustainability, innovations, clinical research. She works and educates at numerous educational institutions and clinical institutions around the world. And Ann, thank you so much for joining us today.
It is an absolute honor and pleasure to be here, Jim. Thank you.
Yeah, this is such a critical time. We are somewhere in the trajectory of the COVID-19 pandemic. Yes. And so the whole concept of digital health could not be more timely. The importance of digital health, what it can do, how it can help, what it looks like, documentation, the supply chain, which is on the news every day because supply chain nobody's ever paid attention to until it breaks down, and it has broken down. So if you could just touch a little bit about your background and your experience around these issues, then give me details.
Yes, thank you. I started in my career as a pediatric critical care nurse, so I have a deep respect for the many, many very brave and talented clinicians in our ICUs today trying to manage just an unprecedented situation like COVID. I was also a chief nursing officer for a historical situation, not quite this bad, for SARS, and experienced very firsthand what and how health systems really need the tools to be able to respond as quickly as we're seeing today. But perhaps we don't quite have all of the tools we need yet. And I'm also a researcher that looks at how does innovation embed and scale in health systems with particular focus on digital technology. So from a clinician lens, my heart breaks for our workforce and the many families they're trying to help under very difficult circumstances, and have all of them in my prayers, I can tell you.
Absolutely. What are the elements of digital health? Is it We used to think of digital health just as documentation, but it's also communication and telemetry and telecommunication. But there's also aspects that touch on supply chain. So what are the different elements that you see in digital health, Ann?
So digital health, from my perspective, is a strategy. And it's a strategy to transform how health systems operate and how we can deliver care and engage people and the populations that we are mandated to serve much more directly. So it's about all of those things you've mentioned. It's up until many recently, really, we think of digital health as digital technologies, and technologies are critically important. But at the heart of digital health, it's really the ways of rethinking how do we engage our patients, families, communities digitally, and be much more connected to them in very meaningful ways to help them stay well. So you think about the situation today in the pandemic where someone gets the COVID virus, but they may be luckily have mild symptoms. How can we connect to those families looking after a loved one with COVID in their homes to give them the tools and the confidence and the connectivity to health providers when they need it and where they need it in a way that automates and makes it easier, to keep people connected and feel confident about managing in a pretty tough circumstance. So digital health, from my mind, is a whole system transformation that helps connect meaningfully to people and populations, make available to those people, those care teams and care approaches digitally and online or in person, of course, when needed, and are much more proactive. Today's health system, pretty much we wait for you to get sick. We then do our best to work and deliver the care needed to help you get better. A digital health system proactively identifies who's at risk for becoming ill, and let's intervene and help them today so that they never get that virus. So we've looked at and we've seen every day on various media channels how to stay well, how to prevent getting this terrible virus. It's a digital health systems would very proactively identify, here's our population of whatever, million people. Here are those 3 to 5% who are at greatest risk. Let's work with them really early to self-isolate, make sure they have all the supports they need, the resources they need, and stay connected to health teams when and if they're concerned that they have become ill. That's what a digital health system does. It really transforms how we're engaging people and populations, using data to identify who's at risk, how do we keep them well and reduce those risks, and connect with people in digital environments so that people are able to manage their health and wellness and stay well.
You know, Ann, one thing that you mentioned there, and certainly I've seen this almost daily on the news, is the data that comes in and is used for data modeling. So people are able to analyze data from Spain or Italy, and if they're in New York, they have a sense of not only what's ahead, but a timing of what's ahead.
And
that type of data modeling really is helps with preparation for care. Knowing how big the wave is.
And really one of the key features of a digital health system is, well, there's a number, but one of them is how do we mobilize that data? So in the earliest days, China had a lot of data on what was unfolding and how quickly and to whom, and what care processes seem to be working or not. That data had it, and then Italy and Spain and the many countries. If we had data that flows across country jurisdictions, that allows one country to learn from the experiences of another. And then take that data and use very sophisticated analytics like machine learning, artificial intelligence tools, all of those good tools that would say, given all of the features of the population in New York or London, England or Windsor, Ontario, here's what you can expect, here's your highest risk group, here are the timelines, and here are the strategies that could optimize or achieve the best outcomes. It's never going to prevent and eradicate, but it could proactively intervene early enough to achieve those outcomes that are achievable.
A lot of the technology that we're talking about has been available for some time. I'm thinking about just the telehealth, telemedicine, or virtual visits. If we didn't have the capability that we do right now, where a provider gets a phone call from a patient or a patient's relative saying somebody in our house is sick, shall we bring them in? Well, in these circumstances, you do not want to bring them in to a waiting room or to an office. And talking on the phone is one thing, but anybody who's been in healthcare knows if you can look at somebody, you almost have a gut feeling, this person is really sick. We need to do something. And so that's been available. But just in the last, we're having this call on April 1st, just in the last week or two, have the, in the U.S., Medicare reimbursements for virtual visits be the same as physical visits. And the certification for home health that used to require in-person visit, a lot of that can be done virtually now. So that technology's been there, but we haven't used it. It's being used now.
Correct. And one of the, I guess you could perhaps say a silver lining, if there is such a thing, is the policy frameworks that allow a health system to deliver care virtually have been a real struggle and challenge, as have been the reimbursement models. And suddenly now, when we have this crisis, and the only opportunity to try and help people stay well. Like the many people who need healthcare on a regular basis because they may have chronic illnesses. They're not COVID patients, they're at higher risk, but if we can't engage them virtually, how is it we're gonna help them stay well? So our policy frameworks have suddenly very quickly realized, here's why we need virtual visits. They're solving a challenge today for the COVID pandemic, but there'll be a key lesson learned in this pandemic, as we have had key lesson learned on many of our previous pandemics. We learned a lot of things in the Ebola outbreak. We learned, Canada learned some very hard lessons in the SARS pandemic because of the failures in the system. So the hope is these lessons learned become the key strengths countries rely on moving forward. And virtual care delivery and the importance of it today, more so than ever before, I think will be potentially one of those very significant and important and somewhat rapid shifts in healthcare that, yes, this is not new technology. We've been doing this kind of thing in many, many other business sectors for decades in some cases. Healthcare is really, given this difficult time, has figured out where and how and why it's so important. So it is the way healthcare does work. It tends to, the policy frameworks tend to be the laggard. They tend not to get on the track as quickly as sometimes we'd like them to for many, many reasons. But in every pandemic over the course of history, there have been very significant and important lessons learned and key changes that have improved health systems. And I think this won't be an exception.
I couldn't agree more about that, Anne. I'm just thinking how over the last few years, we've had the buzzword in healthcare of population management. Yes. And yes. So it's a buzzword. We kind of know what it is, but it's kind of a policy and it's kind of kept in the drawer and maybe dragged out from time to time. But it's on the national news every night now.
Yes, it sure is.
Here's the charts. Here's the graphs. Here's the demographic groups that are most at risk. And so it's really in the front burner now. Yep. Let me just mention to our audience, if you're just tuning in now, you're listening to the Tate Chronicles. Today's episode is with Anne Snowden. It's sponsored by HP, the leader in the world's most secure and manageable PCs. You can learn more about HP's Healthcare Edition products at hp.com/go/healthcare/US. And be sure to follow the company on Twitter @HP. Before we started our interview, when we were talking briefly, Anne, we talked about supply chain. One thing most people have never had to worry about or think about, you go to the grocery store and get your lettuce and don't have to think about how it got there. But with the extreme situations we're seeing with protective health information and ventilators and beds and things, we are hearing about the supply chain nonstop. And I know you've been involved in the healthcare supply chain for quite some time. So any information you would give us, or please
yes,
do.
Yes, absolutely. Health is a sector that has not adopted the supply chain practices and technologies and tools that many others have. And there are many reasons for that. But we see today in this pandemic how critically important it is. So just a couple of examples. When we were all traveling on airplanes, there is a very clear picture and traceability of every passenger. They know when you arrive, when you went through security, what gate you went to, what seat you sat on that plane, and where did that plane travel to, and where and at what time did you disembark. In a health system, we don't have such a supply chain. We don't have the infrastructure that would scan that barcode on the boarding pass or the patient's ID band in the case of healthcare to know who has arrived, what care are they here for, when did they arrive at that clinic or that operating room, who did that procedure, with what products, over what time frame, and what outcomes did that care process achieve. That's a digitally enabled supply chain that also would allow any health system leader to go online to their computer or smartphone and know how many masks do we have, when are their expiry dates, how many will we need available in case we have a rapid surge in demand in cases, and if we've only sole sourced those masks from a particular company in a part of the world like Asia, what's our secondary source of those masks in case we're going to need them? That's the digital supply chain that we really do need today, and that has made it very hard for personal protective equipment to be available in all of those hospitals and clinics and organizations that need them as patients are coming through the door. So the digital infrastructure that allows that to happen is not new technology. It's simply, you know, barcoding, QR code, scanning, just like we see every day in a grocery store, or every day in an airline terminal, or even in an automotive center where they simply scan the barcode of your what your vehicle is you're driving. And that's something that we have designed and developed a strategy for implementing such a supply chain to help health systems make sure that their supply chain infrastructure is not just well-developed for a single organization, but it's visible and transparent to entire states, countries, and global jurisdictions for those very critical supplies and products and equipment like masks and ventilators and your tracheal tubes, all those things are available to those populations who need them. And there's what we really need is a global network so that everyone knows how we can work together to make sure the most effective populations have the tools they need and the products they need to help them survive this kind of a challenge.
And when we talked about telehealth technology and population management software, that was available and ready to be used. But the type of global supply chain, healthcare supply chain that you're talking about is something that's going to have to be built. It needs to be built because it's the disease is global now. Now, I'd like to hear your thoughts around some of the digital electronic issues around track and trace. When we have a contagious outbreak of something, whether it's Ebola or something like smallpox, you have to find the people that are infected and find out who they've been in contact with. And so around the world, different countries are using different technologies. What have you seen? What have you heard? Is it even
One thing, and I've spoken to really two or three different countries at this point, primarily because everyone is so busy trying to manage this crisis, but we are still relatively manual in terms of how we are identifying patients who have symptoms and need to be tested and tracking who might their contacts have been. Did they just get off a plane with 300 people that we need to now be concerned about, or have they just walked out of a classroom in a university? Most of our technologies today in terms of identifying who has symptoms, who's being tested, what are the test results, how do we mitigate risks of transmission from that person, and how do we help that person get well, are primarily filling out PDF forms every day when a patient walks through the door of a doctor's office and gets identified as someone at risk, and then emailing it to the local public health unit, or an Excel file that a supply chain team has to fill out every day, counting how many masks you have, how many are N95, how many are not, you know, others. It's still quite manual. If we had, and we do have some of the technology in place, we have distribution networks for all those distributors that deliver products to every hospital in the world. They have their own supply chain system. Hospitals, to some degree, do have digital inventory management systems, but they're not connected to the distributors, or connected distributors are not connected to the manufacturers. So it's a matter of building those bridges and those connections between who has what piece of the data we need to get to, and how does that data become visible and accessible to our public health agencies who are so desperately in need of knowing what people are out there, where do they live, what are their contacts, are they well and at risk, so we need to help them, you know, mitigate that risk by getting them to stay home and socially isolate, who is potentially has been at risk of getting that virus because they just got off that plane, and connecting to them digitally to say, tell us how you're doing, track their outcomes, track their symptoms, so that we can identify them early enough and coach and help support them so that if they don't do become sick, they don't feel like they've been sent at home and, you know, wish you all the best. We hope you, it goes well for you. But they have that digital connection to health teams for the support they need if they need it. So imagine having a digital ecosystem that people can have the tools right on a smartphone to self-assess, here's how I'm feeling today, here's how it's changed tomorrow, and here's what the trajectory is and how it's progressing or what's helping me get better. That data is incredibly powerful to learn from how one population things are being experienced so we can help the next population who's at greatest risk 2 weeks from now or maybe 4 weeks from now. And that's really the value of the digital health system. It's have much better visibility and connectivity to citizens to help understand who do we need to help, who do we need to make sure they're isolated, how do we prevent them from getting sick, and tracking those who do get sick to ensure they have every support they need.
That's so true, and I can only imagine that the manual nature in most countries now, if they're even doing track and trace, is for all practical purposes not being done. Names are written down because the acute nature of what's going on does not allow for suddenly hundreds of thousands of people to be out there trying to track it and trace people. Now, one thing technology I've recently read about, kind of fascinating actually, is that in Israel, they have been doing some work around track and trace based on proximity of cell phones. I don't know if you've read about that.
Yeah. Yes, I haven't, but the technology is there.
Right.
You can look at a screen today and you can identify where all of the concentrations of cell phones are, which means somebody has that cell phone in their pocket.
Right.
And it's the high densities would immediately tell you, ooh, there's a group and an ability to track how people, and you're not tracking individuals, so to speak, but where are those concentrations?
Exactly.
Of people that then that concentration may place them at greater risk.
Exactly. Well, and that tracing software was developed as an anti-terrorist tool.
Yes.
Obviously the decision was, wow, if we know where there's some concentrations or vectors of COVID-19, we can see where their phones have been near other people's phones, and everybody keeps their phone with them. So it's just kind of interesting how, you know, that was being used out of the blue.
And there are similar models, data models, that could track and identify for public health leaders what the airline travel patterns look like between regions, right? And fairly quickly after the outbreak in China, flights were canceled. But the data that would allow us to know, gee, before the cancellation of flights or not allowing flights from China into certain, like the US, for example, we know there's 7,000 people that were on those planes in the last 3 weeks. So those would be the 7,000 people that you had, if you had data on, you could look at and identify how do we help them now stay safe, whether it's through social isolation or reporting with a simple self-assessment tool so that we can track whether their exposure has resulted in an infection. There's so many opportunities when you have a digital network that's connected so that our experts in infectious diseases and public health can help people help themselves stay well. And that's really a hallmark of a digital health system.
And I can't believe it, but our time is
up.
Well, the grains of sand have gone through the hourglass, as they say.
Yes.
It's been a fascinating discussion, and I appreciate your time and your input today.
It is an absolute pleasure and honor to have had the chance. So thank you ever so much, Jim, for the opportunity. It's been tremendous.
And to our audience, thanks for joining us on this episode of the Tate Chronicles. And, of course, I offer a special salute to my guest, Ann Snowden. Ann, thanks so much for coming aboard today.
Thank you.
I also want to thank HP for sponsoring today's episode. You can learn more about HP and their Healthcare Edition products that were designed with clinicians in mind. to streamline patient care and optimize clinical workflows. And you can find out more about that at hp.com/go/healthcare/US. You can find more information on this show's program page at healthcarenowradio.com. Until we meet again, here's wishing you smooth sailing and safe harbors.
Tate Chronicles transmission ending now.